This is Wade Brathke. That means it's Friday morning. It's Wade's World from 9 to 9:30 Central Standard Time, East Coast, 1 hour later in Nairobi. It's a much later, 10.5 hours later in India. We're broadcast at www.kabf.org on live streaming and 88.3 FM, the voice of the people, 100,000 watts of people power, broadcasting from the studio in Little Rock, Arkansas. Happy New Year for 2016, but you know the story on Wade's World. We talk to the most interesting people in the world. And today we're talking to Joe Zykos, the Executive Director of Virginia Organizing, a dynamic community organization, 20 years to its credit. Joe, welcome to Wade's World.
Thanks, Wade. Happy to be with you.
Well, happy to have you. We've talked a little bit to Amanda Pohl a couple of months ago about an exciting book that Social Policy published recently called Building Power, Changing Lives, The Story of Virginia Organizing. And she couldn't have been more helpful, but you've been there since the beginning, haven't you, Joe?
I have, yep.
20 years and counting, and that's after time in Kentucky. Give us a sense of what Virginia Organizing does and what the sort of special vision you brought to community organizing there in Virginia.
Okay. Well, way back in 1995, there was a very different political landscape in Virginia than there is now. I mean, Virginia wasn't a battleground state. Nobody was paying a whole lot of attention. And so we decided to try to build it right, to start from the beginning and not be in any hurry, but to ask around, talk to people who wanted to see something move, just like, what would you like to see here? I mean, it's a pretty simple question, right? And part of it is that none of the national networks really had a presence in Virginia. And labor didn't have a very strong presence. So we knew from the word go that we were about to build something in a longer arc, that we couldn't just say, like, hey, let's get all the seniors, let's get all the labor unions, let's get all the NAACPs together, and we're just going to rock and roll. That wasn't possible because there weren't many partners to bring together. So I spent about a year driving around Virginia hunting for people who wanted to see something different, and happened upon 10 people who said they would commit to put in a year to really think about what kind of organization do we want to build. And these 10 brave souls, none of whom had ever done anything at a state level, were really, really grounded at the bottom. And I think that's the key to understanding Virginia organizing, is we're still committed to the person who's directly affected, who comes in, who says there's something wrong here, I'm not exactly sure what to do with it.
Now, these 10 hardy souls were all over the state of Virginia, or you found them?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, they were all over, and they really ranged, in terms of age, race, gender, sexual orientation. It's like, how much diversity can we pack into 10 people? And they were just committed to this first year. Like, we'll figure this out. And they traveled to the eastern part of Washington, they went to Minnesota, they talked to groups by phone, they read a lot, and they came back and they said, okay, we're willing to look at a 20-year plan. Like, how do we build out there to try to build some power for people who are traditionally left out? And, that sounds pretty simple, right? But in the end...
But we both know better.
Yeah, it gets to be really complicated. But the thing was that they followed the motto of my second grade teacher, who used to always say, take your time but hurry up. Like, do it well, but always be pushing for something better.
Now, did they also go to Kentucky? Because this wasn't your first time to start a community organization. You'd spent many years in very well-regarded Kentuckians for the Commonwealth. And what did you bring from Kentucky? What did you want to do differently, and what did you want to do the same?
Yeah, I think that the first thing I did was I set up in the middle of the state. I learned in Kentucky that if you start in a corner, the other side of that state is really far away. So just practically speaking, say point to the middle of the map, and that's how we got Charlottesville. I think that a lesson we learned from Kentucky was don't be headquartered in the state capital. Because if you are, you get trapped in the gossip chain of the, you know, like the 101 Dalmatians, the barking chain. You avoid that by being outside. And the other is that we started with a really strong commitment to bring in areas of the state and constituencies that were traditionally left out and nobody was going to ever go organize. Because, you know, if you enter a state which isn't very well organized, there is the potential for, you know, an environmental group to set up shop there. There's a potential for some student-based group to set up shop there. But there's not many groups out there who are really interested in trying to figure out how to get to the more rural areas or to try to deal with some constituencies that, you know, people just aren't paying much attention to.
Well, I know the other book that Social Policy published with you was one you and your wife wrote about rural organizing, and that is
right. That
is among the hardest work anybody does in community organizing, and it's, in my view, it's part of the reason it's the most expensive kind of work, particularly in terms
right.
of any kind of self-funding mechanism. How have you managed to, you know, so successfully put your arms around those problems over all these years?
Well, I think that when you start and you say, okay, we're going to be statewide, you can go to the three or four biggest cities and pretend you're connecting the dots in between. That's one strategy. The other is that we found in Virginia, you know, we have seven or eight different media markets. We have different cultures. I mean, it's very different, Northern Virginia and Southwest in the coal field, over in Southampton Roads.
And, of course, suburban Washington as well.
Yep. Wade, I learned from the Kentuckians for the Commonwealth experience that it really is time-intensive. If you want to have people who've never been active before, that's just going to take some time. And if they're spread out, it's going to take even more time because you're going to spend a lot of time in a vehicle going and meeting with different people. So from the word go, we knew it was going to be pretty staff intensive. So right now we have 19 staff people scattered across the state, and a lot of them are like outposts, right? They're out there, and Isabel's in Harrisonburg, and nobody's within an hour and a half of her. And in order to do that, you have to be able to raise funds, and we know that foundations come and go, and they're not always real reliable, so you kind of have to go back to the core value of we have to support ourselves, and we have to do that. And from the very beginning, Steve Fisher, who was very helpful, Steve's a professor at Emory and Henry College, he was very, very helpful in the early days, and he said, like, hey, I just had my 50th birthday party. I could send all the people that I sent an invitation to and ask them that instead of giving me a present, will they donate to this new organization and make a three-year pledge. So we were, that was the core money we raised right away, and kind of set this path of we have to get individuals to donate, we have to figure out ways that people will commit to multiple years. And so over time, we've been able to get to the point now where foundation support is only 20% of our budget, which is different. But if you also look at Kentuckians for the Commonwealth, it's similar. They raise a lot of their own funds internally and get individual donors to support that work. So that became a critical piece of our understanding of, okay, if we want to grow to more communities, you want more organizers, you want more leaders, you need to have more independent money to do that.
Membership dues, which was one thing Amanda shared with us, which kind of surprised me. And she said y'all have never wanted to go there.
Well, the original organizing committee, you know, did a lot of this asking around what works, what doesn't work. And one of the things that we found in Virginia culturally, people just thought, like, okay, I'll give you my dues, and then you go take care of me. And it was a very much like an advocacy-based system of, we're going to support this group, and they're going to hire two people and put them in the state capitol, and they'll speak on our behalf. And there was just a really bad history to that. The other thing that we found is, if we say to somebody the dues are $50 a year, that's what they're going to give you. Whereas now we say to them, like, well, are you in a position to give us, donate $100 or $500? Or so there's no limit, and people think a little differently. Most people who are active donate something, right? So it's almost, you don't call it dues, but they're still supporting. And
well, that makes more sense. I understand that better from what you're saying. So
yeah,
your constituency actually does put in a significant amount of these pledges and donations.
Yes, and we're moving more and more to try to get them to be monthly sustainers, so that they make a longer term commitment. And part of it is that then they have more ownership. I mean, we find now, like, let's just go talk to everybody about, here's what the budget is. Like, here's the budget, and we have 19 people. And when we look at a map, it's like Swiss cheese. We know where the holes are, where there's no groups and there's no organizing going on. We've also found that most other groups in the state working on social justice issues are concentrated in Northern Virginia, Richmond, and Southampton Roads towards Virginia Beach. Well, that's great. And it tends to be the place where you win state elections, but the state legislative power is everywhere else. And so if you want to confront that or try to work with local governments who don't, you know, the more local, the less R&D they have behind their names. They don't worry about the partisanness about it. If you have people who are directly affected going in talking to local governments, they tend to respond real differently. And I think that's one of the things that we should all be thinking about more in the South, that instead of coming in a, you know, trying to do stuff at a state level first, just go down underneath that. Let's just talk about one local government. Can we get them to ban the box on employment applications, or can we get them to do a living wage, or can we get them to do something? Because after a while, we find that most of the change going on in Virginia right now is at that local level.
Well, believe me, and you know this, and it's exactly what you're saying, you can't, in the South now, you can't go state to local. You've got to go local to state, or not
right,
have a chance. We're talking to Joe Zifos, a very experienced and well-regarded community organizer who is the executive director of Virginia Organizing. We're talking about a book that's come out recently called Building Power, Changing Lives, A Story of Virginia Organizing and Its 20-Year History. Looking at this book, what are the two or three things you think are the most valuable that readers who want to really make change in their parts of the world could pick up from reading Building Power?
Well, I think the first lesson that we learned is that we have to talk about power. Like, what are we trying to do here? I think a lot of groups start because they say, we want more affordable housing, or a group will be concerned about environmental issues, or maybe they're going to work on LGBT rights. That's all great, but if you're going to build for the longer term, it's pretty comparable to building a house. I mean, if you don't take the time to think through what you really want and how the living room is connected to the bathroom, is connected to the kitchen, it's not going to be what you really want it to be later on. So we took the time to do that, to do the power analysis. How do we think we can change things? Do we want to be in the state legislature? Do we want to be at the local level? And even now, that's led to every April, the last weekend of April, we stop the clock, the entire board, staff, chapter leaders, and other community leaders go and hide for a couple days, and as we say, we go 30,000 feet up and look down and say, what's the political landscape down there? Where are we in it? What can we do to change this? How's this going to work? So it's a question that's always on our mind, so that if somebody says, hey, there's this great campaign, well, does that campaign really fit in to what we're trying to do here and change here? That I think is one of the most valuable lessons that Building Power Changing Lives shows, because we kind of go through and talk about what that meant for us and how we made some decisions. I mean, we were a statewide group that didn't do any statewide campaigns for 5 years, and that's kind of sounds weird until you realize, well, in that first 5 years, we were building chapters in places where nobody ever went. The second thing was that we put race at the core of Virginia organizing from the very beginning. And I will say that on day one, we did not know what we were doing. And that was okay. Like, hey, we don't know what we're doing, but we know it needs to be in the center, because before Virginia organizing and before 1995, there had never been a successful multiracial statewide organizing effort that lasted. They would always implode somehow. Say, okay, well, we got to figure that out. And we talked to lots of people, and we tried lots of things and did workshops. But the book also kind of goes through that story of how we eventually came down to realize you got to do Virginia stories, you got to do Virginia examples. And, you know, I mean, I must admit, from my Kentucky days where we blocked bulldozers and really took on the coal industry, well, people in Virginia aren't going to do that in the same way. There's a different culture, a different approach, and so we had to figure that out. How does it work with race? How do we build trust? How do we work together? And our approach was to go in places that nobody else ever went. And like in Southwest Virginia, where there's not a significant population of people of color, and we challenged the jury selection system in Lee County, because until 1998, no person of color had ever served on a jury in Lee County, which is the furthest southwest county in the state. Well, we were successful in getting them to change that. So other people looked and said, wow, if it could happen over there, maybe something could happen here. And I think that's the third lesson of the book, is it's like everybody will tell you it's different here, it's harder here, it's more unique here.
You got to figure
that out. And by us going to the places that were less than easy, people would start saying like, oh, okay, well, maybe I can try that. Because we really raised the bar from the beginning. I mean, when the 10 organizing committee people sat around, they decided that they were going to deal with race as a priority, but they were not going to run away from gender, sexual orientation, ability, and lots of other issues. That this was going to be the place where everybody who's getting kicked in the head has a home to try to change things, and we're going to work together, right? So that if you're really, really interested in Medicaid expansion, that's great, but we expect you to show up when there's a real challenge to immigration reform. And so I think that's the other lesson I would share, is that you just have to say to people, well, that's the expectation here. We're all in this together, and we've got to show up for each other and learn from each other, which is actually fun, because if you don't know anything about immigration reform and you're passionate about Medicaid expansion, we just say, okay, well, let's go over there and show up. You'll learn how the local government works, or you'll get to meet with a member of Congress, or, you know, because the leadership work can really get woven into all that, but it has to be really, really intentional in what we're doing.
There are a million things we could talk about, and obviously the four lessons you just pointed out in the book is there are no shortcuts. It's hard work. You got to hunker down and do it, and that's why
right.
Virginia Organizing and under Joe's leadership of the staff has been so successful. But you've also been able to integrate a lot of work from Hungary. I just talked to one of your associates yesterday, a young woman who said she'd spent a year with you and was trying to do a book on community organizing in Hungary.
Yep.
How have you managed to integrate folks in like that? Because that's another different world, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I think that if you have chapters that are built around, we're going to bring people in who are going to both learn and teach at the same time. We're going to learn from each other, and we're going to help each other learn what we know. Then bringing somebody in from a different culture and a different country, different language, whatever, they sit down and they begin to work together on this longer-term arc of, okay, well, we want a better world. and how do we work for social justice, and also share, well, what have you learned? How does that work? I think that if we look at the kind of electoral campaign mentality, which really gets into a lot of the way the national issue campaigns are run, they say, okay, Wade, you're this local organizer, and what we need you to do is coordinate phone banks and canvassing and, you know, get some letters to the editor and occasionally have an action. It's like, well, that's not really what we want to do here. We start with, hey, we're going to build relationships, and we're going to talk to people about what they would like to see changed and what they want to learn. And if you start at that point, you can still do phone banking and canvassing and letters to the editor and actions. But because I spent some time in Hungary prior to coming to Virginia, I encouraged Hungarians, if they want to learn, well, just come in and get into an organization. So that when Betty, who was here for a year, she would go out to a chapter and, you know, it was a conversation that she'd talk about what she knows and they'd talk about what they know, and then they get together, and then there's a foundation that they can build off of, and Betty would say, I'd like to learn about this, and someone would say, okay, well, but when we have this meeting, would you be willing to share 15 minutes of what you're learning in another part of the world? What's that like? How do I do it? And one of the things that the Hungarians were worried about is that they were going to be a burden. And we were like, no, you're not going to be a burden. You're going to help people understand that there's a bigger world out there. Because in a lot of...
Well, that's important, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah.
We're no lie. You know, even in the smallest hollows of Arkansas, which is where the station is run, and Virginia, there's... Nobody is secure from the impacts of this great wide world we're living in, whether it's the air around us or the politics or the Chinese market collapsing.
Right.
So the Virginia organizing story, what can we, I know you said you'll meet in April and look at, from 30,000 feet, but obviously the political season is right in the middle. Y'all are in a key state.
Right.
What do you see in the next couple of months in Virginia, the year coming up?
Well, actually, as we look out right now, we're staring down a three-month session of our state legislature that starts next week.
Uh-oh.
And we're not going to do much anything because in the state house, it's controlled by the conservatives. It's 66-34. That's a heavy lift to try to get anything changed. And the Senate is 21-19. There's a little tension there, but it's not the place where we see a lot of change happening. So what we've done is said, okay, we'll play some defense, but what we did is in November and December, we met with legislators back home, with people who are directly affected, sitting down with them saying, look, you gotta help us out here. You're going to be there. You need to really represent us in whatever you're doing. So we try to bring the meetings back home to the home district instead of everybody rushing to the state capitol. The other thing that we're heavily involved in is when you do a lot of work locally, eventually something's going to pop up to where you do non-legislative campaigns. So we now have, as a result of the events in Ferguson, we started to meet with local police chiefs and said, hey, you got to pay attention here. We got problems in our own communities. Would you start data collection systems to know, well, are there any trends? Are your officers mistreating any constituency out there or any age group or race, ethnicity? Like what's going on? And we were able to convince several local police chiefs that they would do that. Well, last year when we had our annual 20th anniversary gathering in the fall, we were able to bring the attorney general in and say, hey, we're talking to the police chiefs. They want to do data collection, but can we do this in a sensible way statewide? Can we begin to look and explore kind of common systems? Can, you know, what's going to happen out there? So the attorney general has agreed to meet with 10 police chiefs in February to work on that. Now, that allows us to then go back to other communities and say to the police chief, we're not just meeting with you here. We're asking you to come and meet at a state level. So one of the lessons that we've learned is that there are a lot of local officials who are isolated. You know, that one police chief over there is just one police chief. But can we work with them and bring them together with the statewide office holder and try to build that bridge in between? And the fun part is all those meetings have people who are directly affected in them. So
that's a good campaign case story of what people can look forward to from Virginia and take home as well. You can get a lot more of these stories by reading Building Power, Changing Lives, The Story of Virginia Organizing. It's available at www.socialpolicy.org. $15, they'll get it right to you. We've been talking to Joe Zykos. Joe, we're closing up right now on Wage World, but how do people get a hold of you and Virginia Organizing if they want more information?
Yeah, we're easy to find on the internet. It's www.virginia-organizing.org. And if they want to give us a call, we're always available, 434-984-4655.
We're going to need to talk again to Joe. We could have covered about a half million other topics. Next week on Wage World, we're going to talk to Frank Steyer about Guns and Kids, his new book about stopping the madness, and it's quite timely right now. This has been Wage World on KABF 88.3 FM. Stay on for Zivilaviv and our friend Alexia. Thank you and good night.